and leadership.
Yes, I believe in those. And I'm trying to...
also democracy, that's something I'm becoming
yes,
very...
Well, you see, we had an overall democracy. we elected our leader, and we elected the treasurer and the secretary of the party.
Mm. So, some people seem to think democracy, though, means just one man, one vote, full stop.
Yeah, no, democracy is a competition in ideas and leadership.
Democracy means rule by an informed, intelligent group.
Right, yes, yeah, I'll accept that. And now...
And accountability, that is the most important thing. Your leaders must be accountable. That is why we have no democracy. In this country, we have a system where every 5 years we can vote for a government which will break all its election promises after the election. What we need is accountability. I don't know if you read Sun Yat-sen's brilliant book, The Three Principles of the People. He defines democracy as four things: the right of election, the right of recall, the right of referendum, and the right of, he doesn't call it suggestion, I can't remember what he calls it, but you must have the right to elect your initiative, yeah. You must have the right to elect your leaders. these leaders, as Douglas would say, if you go into a hospital to have an operation, you don't want that decision made democratically.
I said that in the book.
You said that. I thought it was Douglas.
No, I said it.
You want
pinch my.
I'm sure it was Douglas.
you want the operation done.
You may have said it though, but I haven't read that particular.
You want the operation done by a competent man, but if you snuff it, you want him to be accountable.
Yeah, well,
you want the right to elect leaders, accountability, the right of referendum, that is major decisions to be made by an intelligent, informed electorate, and the right of initiative, that is if the people think something should be done, they can suggest. So, I'm a great believer in democracy, not one man, one vote, not like...
Well, I'll tell you this, that if you believed in democracy, if you saw the college party at work, you'd cease to believe in it, because they waffle and waffle and waffle. I've never met a bunch to waffle so much. They not only have put resolution after resolution there, but they put amendments to them and that sort of thing. And even my resolutions there, somebody put an amendment to it. Couldn't leave it alone. And the amendment is not as well worded as mine. That's something said to me by a chap named Martin, who lives in Leeds. And I've just got that. I got it this morning, actually. The thing is, I can't. It doesn't really
What I want to do anyway is initially get together a group of perhaps 40 or 50.
Right. Well, I'll give you these addresses.
And when we've done that, we must spend perhaps 6 months or so. We must get a firm financial base and an office or something.
Yes. Now, do you know anybody who is a carpenter?
Carpenter. No.
Now I'll tell you what I've got an idea for. And I've done this before. Before the war, I built a travelling theatre, what put over so great. And I built the theatre myself. It was collapsible. You could put it in a trailer. And I built it. And I built certain costumes. One was Mars, the god of war, in blood red anodized aluminium, because I was in that game. And the other costume I made was a robot costume, which the chap put on. And I put it on. Now I want another one of those costumes made. I want them to make the body part. I can probably make the arms and the legs. But I want the body part made for me, and to look like very much like this one here. This the reason why I had this on the cover was because I was going to have a robot costume like that, you see, and to have it parading around with people selling these, you see, to advertise this booklet. In the precincts and so on, you see, there to sell this book, you see. Now, the thing is, the trouble is, I can't do what I did 30, 40 years ago. I'm afraid all I can give now are ideas. I can write and I give my imagination, and my imagination is as good as ever. And I think I can say I'm a fighter, but of course I'm I'm a semi-invalid, put it that way, that I can't do the things.
Well, you've got to slow down.
I've done it in the past. I've chucked a brick through a bank window. I've had two convictions against me for busting up black shirt meetings.
I don't want anything like that.
I've been a petted on a rent strike.
We must get this group together.
Right.
Keep it small at first until we get enough finance behind us so we can afford one or two full time. What something else I thought is to have a business side. Initially, what I thought is premises, and then perhaps starting a shop or something with it to sort semi finance it, something like that.
Actually, your membership will always be small, isn't it? Because, look, if you have 100 members, you'll be lucky if you've got 10 active this time.
It's important. It's not so important to have a mass membership. I mean, the Labour Party's got 250,000 members. That never gets anything done. Mm. But it's to have a small, highly trained group.
Well, that's what the Greek
group recruit later. And then if we could move that group into a small town or village or somewhere, right. Take it. Yeah. Now, this is something else I want to talk to you
about. Well, that's more or less what my ideas are.
Something else I want to talk to you about. Just how much research have you done about debt creation, etc., and government borrowing?
Well, I think I'm pretty well read up on the subject on it, pretty thoroughly.
Well, what exactly is the process when, say, a local council, local councils are all in debt to the banks, aren't they?
Yeah.
How do they get a loan from the bank?
Well, what happens is that somebody from the local council goes to the particular bank we're going to borrow from, says that I represent the local council. The local council wants to borrow, say, £5 million because we want to build a hospital or something like that or whatever, you see. And what has happened is that the local council is credited in the bank with that £5 million, you see. The council will have a bank account anyway, and it will be given an overdraft to draw of £5 million. And as it draws on that, it will start paying interest on it.
Right. Now, the thing that gets me is that I'm not married, but if I were married, I took out a bank loan.
What's it got? Have you a kid gone with?
Yes, I have.
Oh, in other words, you've got a common law marriage, haven't you?
Well, yeah. Well, we're going to get married next year, actually. But
we're going to wait until
it's born.
It's not my business, except I just want to know.
So she's a nurse at Halifax General.
You say she met me, did you?
No, I said she. Well, you might have said nurse Hiley, but I don't think she was there at the time. You probably met one or two of her friends, right?
Yes, but she apparently knew about me, did she, in the
problem? No, I told her that there was a Mr. Wilfred Bryce in there, but she was in the school then, she's still training, so
I said
you're in capable hands, though.
Did you tell her what ward I was in?
Yes, I think you did.
Yeah. Ward 12.
A married man takes out a £25,000 mortgage. A businessman takes out a £25,000 loan in his name. He dies. Mm. That loan is wiped out.
Oh, no, it didn't. Neon Nelly. No, you see, the thing is, if he takes a loan for his business...
No, in his name. If he takes it out in his name.
If he takes it as a personal loan...
Well, yeah.
Then his heirs have...
Well, I've taken out bank loans. I've got one at the moment, in fact, it's costing me a lot of money. And it says on there that if I die, the loan is gone.
Well, that's unusual. I've always heard that the heirs had to pay.
It says that. Well, if he's got no heirs anyway, if he's got no heirs, it has to be written off, isn't it? The bank might be able to sell whatever he's got.
Yes, foreclose on it.
But I think you'll find a lot of this now is linked with insurance companies. Generally,
what has happened is what the bank has done is to include with that loan an insurance cover.
Yeah, but very often the bank owns the insurance company as well.
And therefore that means that it's charging you extra interest to pay for the insurance.
But, I mean, this is what National Westminster Bank, for example, their parent company is Lombard PLC. Mm. What does PLC stand for? I've changed this from National Westminster Bank to Barclays Bank Limited to Barclays Bank PLC, basically.
No, it's called National Westminster.
Yeah, I know, but
they've,
I mean,
they've built that new.
I used to have a checkbook, and I mean, it said
that 50-story
National Westminster Bank Limited, but now it's National Westminster Bank PLC. All companies, all banks now.
Oh yes, they're putting PLC on it now. Yes, yes, that's right. I've got a statement from Middle Bank PLC, and I wonder what the hell that means.
Well, I'll ask for a bank manager, but
I must ask for something that's new. It's fairly new, then, isn't it?
But if you get a mortgage from the bank, say. It's a possibility, like a £20,000 mortgage. A man, wife, and two kids, say. You get a mortgage, and you raise your insurance cover with it, which is done through the bank's holding company or the insurance company's part of the bank. But you die, and the loan is cancelled, isn't it?
Well, if there's an insurance cover on it, yes. But not otherwise.
Yeah. But, nobody nowadays in his right mind takes out a mortgage without taking insurance, really.
Probably not. Well, you see, it's become the insurance is sort of part and parcel of the loan.
Yeah. Now, local authority. If the Labour government, if the Labour local authority borrows £5 million and is paying interest on it, then the Tories get into power. The Tories still have to pay it off.
Oh, yes.
Who is the local authority, though?
Well, the local authority is what has been elected at the time.
Right. And they have the right to levy a rate, in fact.
Yes.
Why do we have to pay?
Hmm?
What happens if they don't pay?
Who don't pay?
The ratepayers.
Well, if the ratepayers went on strike and didn't pay, then it would I wish we could organise them to get that to happen, but the thing is...
This is something... You read about loans to certain countries in Africa. I mean, Chad, which is the second poorest nation in the world. I don't know what the first one is. Zaire. Mm. Nobody going to lend any money to these countries because they've reneged on loans.
But they still lend, won't they?
Yeah. But the point is that...
Argentine can't pay other loans, but then there's Lloyds Bank lending them nearly a billion.
The point is though that these are countries which, because they're backward primitive countries, they can't pay their loans. But in the West, we always pay our loans. What would happen if a nation said, "We're not going to pay anymore. Stop."
Well, that's what happens. It happens. It's happening all the time. They don't pay. You know what happens? It helps the system to go on because you see. If they pay back, that money's cancelled out of business. But if they don't pay it back, it's still floating around in the economy, isn't it?
Does the bank eventually write the loan off, though?
Yes, in many cases.
Can you think of documented instances?
I'll give you an instance. I can't give you the exact date, but the White Star Line, of which I mentioned in my book, by the way, had a debt of £17 million wiped off the slate. And that was in somewhere around about 1930. And all that was required was that the White Star Line should have a man appointed from the bank to go on their board as the director. Now, that is how the multinationals are built up. You see, the individual firms getting financial difficulties, and they are then told that their difficulties will be solved for them, that if they will go into a merger, and that's where you get
the... Now, have you read the leaflet by Social Credit Centre, The Absurdity of the National Debt?
I haven't read that one.
I think it's by the late Duke of Bedford. He suggested the national debt could
I think I have read it, but...
The national debt could be erased by... What the banks would do is they would, first of all, draw a distinction between genuine loans, between people who genuinely bought their share of the national debt with investments, etc. And bank-created credit.
I thought this one out. You know how I'd settle the matter if I was the head of the National Credit Government? I would instruct the National Credit Office to write out a cheque for that loan, send it round to the Bank of England and any other, perhaps through several cheques, send them round to the thing and say, "You are paid." Okay, full stop. Now, when these people get the loans paid, they've got to cancel the money out of existence. They can't use it for further advances. Now, if any private individual gets some of that money, it's all right for him. He can use it as buying power. So he doesn't lose it. You see, now, for instance, the National Front said, and this was silly, they said they'd cancel the national debt. We won't cancel it. We'll pay it off with just simply a credit creation.
Well, this is, our national debt is over 120,000 million.
115 billion.
More than that now.
115, is it? Well, the last thing
was 113,000 million on the 31st of March 1981.
Well, I heard it was 115, but it goes up so rapidly.
Well, I'm not going to argue with it, but it's enormous, isn't it?
Yeah. And
So what this guy said, was, I think, Richard Bedford, was that the bank should be ordered to sell this to the government, who would repay the banks with freshly created non-debt money, which the banks would be required to cancel out of existence.
Yes, correct.
There would be no more national debt then.
No.
A similar thing could be done with local authorities.
Yes, correct.
So there's no need for this debt at all.
No, local
authorities are. This is, you mentioned the figure 40% money treatment. Something like 40% of all rates go to pay service debt. Now, if we could take over a town,
or
village,
haven't thought that,
and wipe the debt out,
yes,
that would be possible.
Yes, it would have to be on a fairly big place like Leeds, I think.
No. It couldn't be a city. We'd just never get the clout. Never get the muscle.
Well, it would be very difficult for a small area.
Small area we could control, though.
Because you see, a small area doesn't really have much control over that. You see, most of the payments you'll find are done through the county authorities. And all the small areas can do, like the parishes and so on, like that they can do, is simply merely, if they want to do any purchasing, they have to simply ask the higher council to pay it. They do not have any autonomy in handling money. I agree with that. You see, they can.
But that is what
they
we
can
need.
Produce
we
a
need,
little budget of their own.
We need control.
Yes, they need a little budget of their own. But you see, as far as getting any payments is concerned, they've got to go to the higher authority.
Now, can we talk a bit about Alberta and Guernsey as well? Now, I've heard of the Guernsey experiment. Mm. It's still going on, is it?
Yes. By the way, if you're writing for try and get a copy of the Guernsey experiment.
I've seen. I think Social Credit Centre has a copy.
Yes. Well,
I might be able to get one off Donald
Martin. Yeah, actually, it's not very.
I think it's on Bluefield's list. Actually, I'm not sure.
Yes, I think you'll find that it won't cost very much. He's got a copy. But the one I had was the one by Grubiak. And that I lent to the ecology party, and then another bloody one sent it back to me. what they call the Economic Working Party, EWP means the Economic Working Party.
But there's no national debt in Guernsey.
Well, actually, they do have debts with Britain. But then, you see, that's related to the use of British money, you see. As far as the debt in Guernsey is concerned, their own municipal thing, there's no debt. But, of course, you see, they if they want something from Britain, they have got to get credit to
What currency do they use?
What?
I thought it was pound sterling and pence.
Well, you see, you'll find if you go there, they will trade with you in ordinary British money. You see, or French money. But this is what they're doing with this local money is purely internally, you see, and the ordinary tourist probably doesn't see anything of it.
So what's the right situation, Guernsey?
I must admit, I can't answer more than that. I've just got to.
That's something else we'll have to do. We'll have to send somebody there. Something else I'm very much into is infiltration of communist movements.
Well, infiltrating the ecology party, haven't I? But the point is, I'm doing it openly, not.
Well, no, it's not really infiltrating. But if we get a substantial number of socialists and even the militant tendency plug in this line.
Is it? I've got six supporters, what I call good supporters, in the Ecology Party. There's probably a few more which are a bit indeterminate, but I've got six good supporters of which two were already self-creditors before they joined the Ecology Party. That was There's Brian Leslie. Now, he is the son of John Leslie, who was an Earl Green shirt and was also secretary for many years of the Esperanto.
Oh, God. It's very, very international.
Yes, well, the point was that the point was that they give Leslie credit. He didn't try to convert the Social Credit movement to Esperanto. What he did try to do was to convert the Esperanto movement to Social Credit. You see, so he eventually got the sack, by the way, from the Esperanto Society. So, but this Brian Leslie, the trouble is he's mixing with anarchists and Marxists. And he's absorbed quite a bit of their look. He's trying he complains of my attacking of Marxism in this book.
Well, Marxism is, if you've ever studied any of it, it's absurd. You know, it's just. And Marx himself.
Well, it has a plausibility. You must concede it has
well,
a plausibility.
Well, it's a gross oversimplification, isn't it? Workers versus bosses. The bourgeois and proletariat.
It is.
Also, Marx has some rather peculiar ideas about. Have you read Marx's ideas on race?
No, I haven't read that. I've got two of Marx's books, but not on race.
That would, well.
Mind you, he was something out of an anti-Semite, believe it or not.
In 1843, he wrote a book called World Without Jews, would you believe?
Yeah.
He was a champion of slavery. Both Marx and Engels, while they championed the black man's cause in public, referred to them sneeringly as niggers behind their backs.
Oh, yes, well...
consider them completely ahistorical. But the most interesting part is, if this ever got past the Kremlin, it would destroy it in Russia. He advocated a war of extermination against the Slavs. I wonder what the comrades in Russia would think of that.
Well, you see, unless you can get this well authenticated, any statement like that just wouldn't be believed.
Well,
it?
Yes. Karl Marx racist by the Jew Nathaniel Whale.
Yeah, but then you see that might be simply Nathaniel Whale.
No, well authenticated. It's quite well known in certain circles, actually. Marx's letters to Engels and Engels referring to the niggers and the Tartarized and mongrelized Slavs. But
yes, he was certainly was very unsympathetic to the idea of Russia getting socialism.
He was a complete scum as well. I mean, he made up. Housemaid pregnant, blamed it on Engels. At the time he was writing Capital, he was dabbling so heavily on the stock exchange, he had to get his rich uncle to bail him out.
Yeah,
he never did a day's work in his life, either.
No. But in any case, you see, with any great man, I mean, let's face it, Douglas wasn't a very nice person.
I tend to agree with Hadkins, it's very difficult to read Douglas. I haven't read a great deal.
He's not a good writer.
Social Credit or Monopoly Credit.
He's not a good writer.
Dictatorship by Taxation I have read, and that was very good. I understood that very clearly.
Yeah.
But he was undoubtedly
written by a ghostwriter.
I don't think so. He was undoubtedly a great man, but Marx wasn't a great man. He was just a crackpot German emigre who had some rather ludicrous economic theories, which the bankers thought, oh, great, mm-hmm. He's been Marx is a manufacturer of the media machine, like Marilyn Monroe. I mean, who was Marilyn Monroe?
Mm-hmm.
So what, you know. It's just something that's been manufactured by the media.
The SDP, of course, is a media manufacturer.
But they've also got the Trilateral Commission backing them.
Oh, yes.
David Owen.
Yes, in other words, they're all fat cats, aren't they?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we can use that phrase, fat cats. You see, that's the sort of, by the way, you see, simple phrases can often be very telling. For instance, I speak of the communists as being Kremlin crawlers. You see, it's a quite
interesting. There's a fashion now is to be anti-Stalinist, isn't it?
Yes, you see, I call them Kremlin crawlers, you see, and things like that. In fact, I once composed a bit of a song, you know. When you see the local Reds on the streets or in their beds, you'll find them all doing the Kremlin crawl. I forget what else I wrote, but that kind of invective can be quite useful. In other words, in politics, you've quite often got to use crude invective. And have you read how Hitler came to power?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm a great admirer of Hitler, actually. So.
Well, put this way, I admire him as a technician.
He was a brilliant man.
I admire him as a technician, but I don't admire his character or his...
his
anti-Semitism. Well, not so much his anti-Semitism, but he's cruel.
He wasn't always an anti-Semite, if you read Mein Kampf. He was quite... Initially, he was very favourably disposed towards the Jews.
I don't think so. Don't
oh, yes.
I've read Mein Kampf, I've read Mein Kampf.
Well, he said initially that his first impression of them was that they were people who had been persecuted because of their race or religion, and that he found it very distasteful the way people referred to them. But when he moved to Vienna, he says when he moved to Vienna, that when he came to power, he found that all the banks, all the media, etc., were controlled by Jews who were promoting Marxism, obscenity, etc.
Yeah.
And Erzegler says that Hitler's fault was blaming all the Jews for this, mm-hmm. same as the Jewish involvement in communism, which is
well, weird. Of course, you see, I get people saying that the Jews were backing Hitler. Well, now one Jewish group did. Korn Lubenko gave him finance before he got power.
There were different people. Paul Silverberg, who was Germany's richest, most important Jewish industrialist, not financial industrialist, he financed the Nazi Party, he financed the Strasser brothers. His idea was to split Strasser. You see, when the left talk about fascism, and when the right talk about communism, when the left talk about fascism, what they really mean is a brutal totalitarian dictatorship. Mm. Now, there's evidence that the money power prefers, as Sutton says, they prefer to deal with centralised governments. Mm. They will support so-called fascist governments, provided it's the right kind of fascism, like Argentina, they'll support that. Mm. They'll support fascist states. As long as these people go along with it, the people, the financiers who contributed, and certain financiers did contribute to Hitler, they thought when Hitler came to power it was going to be business as usual, and that it's just a little crackpot with a moustache, he'll persecute a few years, but we don't mind because we live in New York anyway, and we're just manipulating. But when Hitler came to power, one of the first things he did was got the bankers off Germany's banks. The social credit, I mean, it was a bit more, it wasn't a leisure state. I mean, there was nothing leisurely. Don't forget, though, I mean, the technology wasn't there in those days.
Well, Douglas was proclaiming that it was there.
Yeah. But, I mean, even nowadays, the technology is here now, but it's not in Africa. You can have social credit in Chad
I've stated
it's a question of human resources. If you have the human resources, real world results.
Hitler came to power and he did a lot of things like that. He was talking about social justice and that and breaking the banks. They didn't take him seriously. He came to power. He allowed Krupps and the wealth producers to continue. But he took the parasites off the German people's back, and they didn't like him for that. They thought, well, if this guy's ideas get around, if this catches on, we're going to be out of business. And that is part, I think, part of the reason for the start of World War II.
Well, the thing was, right up until the war nearly started, he was getting help from the Bank of England. You see, in 1930. Five, I think, or 36. He got a loan of $300 million.
Lord Rothermere.
And
who was the banker?
He was actually Poetic Justice. He was Bob Lord Stamp.
No, the one I'm thinking of, the governor of the Bank of England.
Oh, then it was Montagu Norman.
But
he wasn't a lord. He never got a title. Montagu Norman.
Didn't he have a Jewish brother-in-law or something?
No, he's not. He wasn't a Jew.
No, didn't he have a Jewish brother-in-law or something? He was married. He was intermarried with Jews, I think.
I don't think there's any truth in that at all. Hargrave wrote a book called Professor Skinner, Alias Montagu Norman, which shows up Montagu Norman there, but it doesn't mention about him becoming connected with Jews. The thing is, Montagu Norman, you must remember that, you remember when, or at least you wouldn't remember, but I'll tell you what did happen. When Hitler tore up the Munich Pact by invading Czechoslovakia in the following spring, after the Munich Agreement. Chamberlain got on the air to denounce Hitler's action for that. Then a few days later, Montague Norman calmly proceeds to hand over gold belonging to the Czechoslovakian government to Hitler's puppet government.
Well, yeah, but I mean...
Well, now, that was only 6 months
before. A lot of this isn't follow Nazism anymore. It's just greed. I mean, you see this in Argentina now. I mean, the Anglo-Argentine War's been over, what, 6 months or less than that. And already that they're financing Argentina again. They'll finance anybody, these people. I mean, they'll finance Russia to find, or backing the communists to kill American troops.
Yes.
The bankers, many of them are Zionists, face it, are financing Russia, or supplying the Arabs who are using arms against Israel.
Mm.
It's just greed. It's like Lenin said, that they'll sell the communists a rope with which they'll hang them.
Right, yes, I do.
It's just greed, good. Parasitism. Well, sometimes they come with Hitler, they certainly
actually
came
to
unstuck.
To speak of the bankers being ruled by greed is a little bit misleading. It's what they're after is power.
Power, yeah. Well, power, control. I want to control
us. People talk about greed, but the real strongest motion in history, the one that's caused more harm than any other, is the lust for power. And that is what you see. After all, what is greed? It's only if you get possessions, it gives you power.
They want to control. This is it. They want to control. They think they know better than us.
Yeah.
It's gonna, the bankers' world is gonna be a wonderful paradise.
Mm.
They're gonna control us all.
Mm-hmm. Well,
one book I think you should read, if you haven't read, the Rockefeller File. You read that?
No.
Nearly finished it now.
It's
further documentation on the New World Order. It's really frightening. The extent of the power of the I didn't quite realise just how powerful the House of Rockefeller
The trouble is, I've got so little money, I can't spend in buying a lot of books this year. I would like to have a good stock of books. I'll tell you what, I've had an embarrassment there. Some old green shirt gave me a whole lot of Douglas's books there. Now, you know, on the back there, I've got to refer to Palmerton as the liberal social credit thing. Well, now, he has completely fallen out with me. Now, I'll tell you why. Because in getting this book printed, now, firstly, there was a chap in London who said he'd get it printed for me. So a chap who's joined with me, and, you know, he was all piss and wind. He was going to do miracles and everything, you know, and that sort of thing. And I'd got a grant of £300 from the residue of the Second Social Credit Party's, which closed down.
I see, yes.
I have a lot to tell you about that. I'll have to leave that for another time. But I got the £300 in January, and come the middle of the year, I hadn't got anything from this bloke at all. So I took the job from him. Now, this Palmer told me that he'd got a liberal friend who'd got a printing outfit, you see. So we go and see this liberal friend, and I give him the everything to see, to get on print. But he doesn't mind. Well, get on with the job, you see. First he goes off on holiday, and then when he comes back, he says, oh, I've got to wait because he can't do it, but he's got a chap in Leeds who'll do it, you see, and I have to wait a fortnight. And then he tells me that the Leeds chap can't do it because he's going off on holiday and so on. So I got fed up and I took the inquiry away. And I got it printed by a printer in Henry Bridge there. And firstly, I have paid £100 to get the thing reduced, to get it typed out properly and then reduced it. £25 to get it typed out. It was about 60 to get it reduced. And of course, there was stationery I was doing for making up, because I had to do a lot of pasting, you know, all these pictures and things I had to buy paste and all that thing. And I estimated it was costing me about £100, you see, that thing. But he did actually get this printed, including making the plates there, for £300 for 2,000 copies. So I can't complain at that. The printing is not absolutely first class, but it's good enough to read. And
can I just use the toilet? If you...
What?
Just use the toilet. Yeah. What exactly happened in Alberta?
Well, Alberta elected a social credit government, and Eberhardt, the leader there. By the way, Eberhardt was a Bible preacher, and he'd been.
This was in 1930. When?
About 1935, 34, 35. He'd been a Bible preacher with a contract, which couldn't be broken, apparently, and he used to speak every Sunday to the whole of the people of Alberta on sort of religious things. But he started mixing up social credit with it, without, by the way, understanding what social credit actually visualised. And he formed his party a month before the election and won it hands down with a colossal majority. What about something like about four-fifths of the seats, something like that, you see, about an 85-90% majority. And then he did, of course, didn't understand how to start the thing, so, and he sent a cable to Douglas, said, "Victorious, when could you come?" Well, Douglas didn't bloody well go.
You know, he wasn't interested in political parties at all, Douglas.
Well, he wasn't, so, but then the thing, he should have gone for that anyway, when he's asked to help to put in a socialist government. And you've got to bear in mind that he had been advisor to the previous Alberta government. He'd been over in Alberta and had been advisor to the United Farmers government, which was just a conservative thing. And he didn't...
Douglas then?
No, what, Douglas had been, yes, oh yes. And he didn't go. And 15 months drifted, in which time a banker's man went in to give them advice, and it quite clearly that he must have talked Eberhard out of social credit. At any rate, John Hargrave, tired of waiting for Douglas, he himself went off his own bat, and he stirred up things in Alberta. He got the rank and file really keen on social credit, having a social credit thing. Eberhard was trying to stall on it all the time. There is a copy of the Alberta Report on that. And I can get you the details of that. And anyway, Hargrave realised that Eberhard was trying to use him purely for cosmetic purposes, not for any real business. So he dramatically left Alberta, saying that he was fed up with the Eberhard regime. And he interviewed the press, you see, and explained why, and so on. Got a tremendous amount of publicity, I think. And that stimulated the rank and file of the MLAs to sort of revolt against Eberhard and to force him to consider social credit legislation. Well, the first bill they produced wasn't the most cop. But then the Secretariat, Douglas's Secretariat, have shamed by Hargrave's visit, and finally sent, firstly sent out a one man who made an ass of himself and got chucked out, because he was starting insulting people, calling them bankers' toadies. They were, but the point is, when you're a visitor, you don't shoot your mouth up. You let the natives do that. And then he was followed by a chap named Byrne, who apparently did give some reasonable advice, and social credit legislation was put through.
But
by that time, it did, 2 years had passed. And Douglas showed his political ineptitude by, Douglas had no idea of political strategy at all. His concept of not having a party and not having forming a government and all the rest of it is completely absurd. You've got to form a government, because only a social credit government will, you see, it's not just enough that you get the public controlling their own credit and that sort of thing. You've got to do a lot more. You've got to fight for the new idea.
How did they do this though? I mean, how did they break the bank? Did they actually succeed in clearing the bankers' debts off, for example?
No, because you see, all legislation was turned down by the government of Canada. You see, Alberta's only province, of course.
Why was it all turned down?
Oh, on some constitutional wrangle.
And nothing happened since.
Well, the Alberta government did manage to do some quite good reforms, but not what you call specific social credit, and it did last for 30 years before it finally lost the election.
Such as?
It got rid of a fair amount of internal debt, which is what the present social credit government of British Columbia has been able to do. You see, there's ways in doing it, even when it's constitutionally against you can still manipulate the constitution a bit. And I imagine that the government of Canada is probably allowed a certain amount of concession, because there's always the danger that the province might revolt against Canada and declare UDI.
Of course.
Yeah. You see, Hargrave did advise the rank file of the MLAs. MLAs means Member of the Legislative Assembly, that's like an MP. He did advise them to defy the government of Canada and put themselves together with them. The government of Canada liked it or not, but they weren't prepared to go that length. You see, and it was maintained there that the The national government would not dare to have sent troops into Alberta because it would upset the whole of Canada. All the other states would have been furious about it.
Would
you go and eat sandwiches?
Yes, so it's really quite farcical, really.
Yeah. But Douglas and the Secretary, to my mind, were a great harm to the social credit movement. In fact, it used to be said, Marshall's there, that Peter Douglas didn't die in 1933, when he'd been a great hero, and that's it. But then, of course, Hargrave himself, you see, he was certainly a great leader and that sort of thing, but then he himself threw in the sponge in 1951, when we about a year after we'd lost the election. And lost it badly. Now, in our first election, the one in Fountain South Leeds, we got 3,600 votes. Then we had the organisation beautiful there. We had all the discipline. We carried out stunts. You see, one of the stunts was that we had three green shirts going in paying the deposit, £150 deposit, with three bags of silver. And that got to all over the press, with pictures of that all over the country. And then we mobbed Baldwin. I remember I was in that party myself, actually. What we did, we got on a train at Wakefield, on the train that Baldwin was on, pretending to be a rugby team. And then when Baldwin got out at the station at Leeds, they cleared the platform for him, by the way. But we got round him and started shouting slogans against him. And so on. We got some publicity for that.
Actually, one thing we've got to work, you're talking about elections. Is there is a movement afoot, as you may know, to raise the election deposit.
I know, yes. Well, £150 in those days was a hell of a lot of money.
To preserve democracy.
Yes, £150 in those days was a hell of a lot of money. See, now it would be equivalent to, you multiply that by about 30 times.
I don't think it should be raised, I think it should be put down.
What?
Well, if Michael Such wants to campaign on a platform in the Raven Looney Party, he's got every right to.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but the trouble is, you see, what happens when a clown like that does it? The trouble is, he gives the established parties an excuse to raise the thing. They say, oh, look, we've got to look at him.
Well, you mustn't let them get around.
And in fact, I wouldn't mind betting he'd been specially put up to it.
No, I don't think
so. Impossible.
But he was given plenty of publicity, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's something that...
publicity thing we need. Well, I've managed to get a little bit of publicity. For instance, I got... you remember that article I've sent you about the...
Socred plan.
There. Well, that was published in the Courier, you know, yeah. With a photograph of me, you know. I got a write-up in the Hembridge Times describing my campaign.
So something a lot of people on the right seem to think is that every nutter and every left-wing crank is part of the conspiracy. But it's not. These people, it's like Spengler said, they don't realise, most of them, that they're being manipulated.
Probably.
It's not a case of ideas being, it's not a case of one enormous conspiracy with a banker giving out his orders every day.
No, it's just that
certain ideas never become respectable.
Yes.
Or given any hearing without the approval or perhaps the lack of disapproval of a certain interested group.
Oh, quite, yes. You see, if you're
occasionally it slips out.
Yes. If you're a person who, head of a business, you know you've got to keep the bank sweet because otherwise they might cut you off credit at the moment. On the hand, if you're an editor of paper, you know again from that point of view you've got to keep the bank sweet, you see. So, you see, supposing a journalist is throwing off his mouth a bit about the banks, you see, the editor would be met by a banker saying, look, yeah, we don't really like this article of yours, you know, so the chap is, you see. In other words, it's softly, softly catchy monkey technique. They don't issue out a decree saying you mustn't do it. Oh, no, that would set the journalists back up against them. No, it's much more cleverly done than that. And, of course, they don't make the boycott of social credit 100%, 99%. You see, that's quite sound, you see. They say, oh, we had a little bit of social credit in, you see. Yeah, well, an odd mention of social credit now and then doesn't make any difference. But would you be wanting another cup of tea?
No.
some more water in the bucket. These mugs take it.